Welcome to Rolling Stone.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, our special meeting where we will take up House Bill 4113 again, open a work session, and invite Heidi and Travis up to bring us up to speed. We're now looking at the Dash 5 amendments, and there have been a few changes subsequent to our conversation last night. And it would be great if the two of you could explain those, please.
Chair Reed, members of the committee, my name is Heidi Elliott. I'm here from the Office of Legislative Counsel today to walk you through the Dash 5 amendments. Just start right in with, we added the words general obligation to sections 1 and 2 to describe the types of bonds that we anticipate issuing. In section 1.4D, we added a new, we expanded the condition that the commission come back and so it's on page 3, lines starting at line 25. If the commission approve a management plan for the project that describes how the department will oversee and deliver the project, develop a financial management system, implement decision-making structures, provide transparent reporting mechanisms that describe the project's progress, and engage third-party oversight by a quality assurance firm. On, we removed Section 3 in anticipation of that actually going where it probably should go, which is the bond bill. We try and keep all of our bonding language authority in one place. Then in all the way into Section 9 is new as well. It directs the department to seek and secure an intergovernmental agreement with the state of Washington regarding the collection of tolls. Let me move on to Section 15. Section 15 comes from House Bill 2800, and it was directing the Oregon Transportation Commission to come back to the legislature regarding studies and recommendations. A particular change has to do with identifying and assessing locations for staging, and specifically calling out the ports of Morrow and the port of St. Helens. We then removed the Buy America provisions. It turns out we didn't need those fixes to those provisions from House Bill 2800, so that whole section is gone, shortening up the bill considerably. And then finally, at the very end, you might recognize the Dash 2 amendments, which is actually it's not the project, it's a cleanup from, I believe it's 2007. We got a little overeager in our cleanup and accidentally repealed something we shouldn't have, and so we're bringing it back with the retroactivity clause so that it's retroactive to 2008.
Very good. Thank you.
Those are all the changes from the Dash 3 map.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Nathanson.
I just want to quickly thank staff for being responsive to an issue that I brought up last night about project management. I very much appreciate the addition of this language.
Very good. Thank you. And I'll add not only to the content, but the fact that we have a new amendment not that many hours after we were here. Thank you for that as well. Other questions? Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure this was clear last night, and maybe somebody can clarify. In page 3, line 13, and I think Representative Bence was trying to ask a question. In the bill we passed last year, the state treasurer was to actually approve the comprehensive financing plan, and that has been removed, and it's going to the OTC. And I thought last night I heard that it couldn't happen, but yet it was in the bill before.
Mm-hmm. Chair Reed, Representative Cameron, for the record, I'm Travis Brower, ODOT's Federal Affairs Advisor. This change was made at the request of the State Treasurer's Office. They will still be involved in the financing plan where their core competencies lie, which is in reviewing and approving the findings of the investment grade analysis and ensuring that that provides adequate toll revenue. However, they felt that their competency did not lie in approving a multi-year cost estimate and comprehensive financing plan for the project. That really is the role statutorily defined for the Oregon Transportation Commission. And as a result, we've made that modification to that particular section, shifting that responsibility to the OTC, which is where it probably should lie. Obviously, the treasurer is to be provided a copy of that cost estimate, and the treasurer will still retain discretion. In the end, the treasurer will have to issue the bonds based on determination that that is a reasonable cost estimate and finance plan for the project. So the treasurer will still have a role in that, but that initial finding would be from the Oregon Transportation Commission.
Follow-up, if I may, and maybe somebody from the treasurer's office, is there a reason they didn't object to this particular section of the bill last time?
Chair Reed, Representative Cameron, I can't answer that question, unfortunately. I don't remember any specific aspect related to that.
Further questions? Follow-up?
Well, that's probably more of a statement. I'll wait till later.
Further questions?
I have one. If you could go to page 3, lines 1 through 3, it says the allocation of responsibilities between the state of Oregon and the state of Washington for the development, design, and construction of the project. So is Washington still anticipated to play a part in these types of activities, even though they aren't reaching for their wallet when it comes to paying the $450 million?
Chair Reed, Vice Chair Bence, Washington would still be playing a role in development and design and perhaps some elements of construction. Chris Strickler may be able to answer that question better. But obviously, with the fact that some of those elements would be in Washington, the development and design would have to be approved by them. And so there would need to be, as with any of our standard bridge, interstate bridge, intergovernmental agreements, all of these issues around those, all of those issues would need to be spelled out in an IGA.
And the follow-up, Mr. Chair. That answers it as to paragraph B. Could you also address the same question as to C?
Mm-hmm. Chair Reed, Vice Chair Bence, all of our agreements on bridges that we have with the state of Washington and with the state of Idaho as well, these are a common intergovernmental agreement that we negotiate. They all discuss the operations and maintenance of the completed facility. For example, I believe that we pay for, or we maintain the interstate bridge currently, and then Washington pays us back for half of those costs. So those are the sort of fairly prosaic terms that would need to be in one of these IGAs that are very important, and that we'd be largely basing that on our existing experience in working with WSDOT on interstate bridge intergovernmental agreements.
And this question actually follows up on a line of questions from last night to the director. And the issue was what happens, it was actually Representative Lively's question, I think, but it is what happens if there isn't adequate money under the $2.9 billion. Mm-hmm. And the analogy that I have used is a poor one, but I'm using it anyway, is that when people come into my law office to do an estate plan, and we have grandma and grandpa sitting there, we look at their assets and we say, hey, we're going to have to spend these assets to take care of these folks for the rest of their lives. So we put together what's called an order of spend down. And we, with the house, it goes out, it's gone. And when the car goes, the jewelry goes, the dog, we get rid of, we say how that's, those things are going to be sold as we pay for those expenses. And perhaps you can share with us the order of spend down of the department's budget and sources if we exceed the $2.9 billion. What gets taken first? And I want you, for purposes of this hypothetical, to ignore increases in tolling.
Okay.
Or any type of extent. Just ignore tolling. Okay. For the moment, because I'm going to assume for purposes of this discussion, you don't have that available.
Okay. Chair Reed, Vice Chair Bence, of course, there is a $2.9 billion cap. So going beyond that would require a legislative modification to this particular provision. beyond that, it might be helpful for Mr. Strickler to talk about potential scope changes or other value engineering and such like that that keeps in budget. And then we can talk about revenue sources that might be available.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay. I already know what those are.
Okay.
I don't want to go through that.
Okay.
I want to hear, if you need money, where are you going to get it?
Mm-hmm.
And Chair, before you come to us and ask for more, you have a memo floating about that already does this. And I just want you to repeat what's in the memo, actually.
Okay. Chair Reed, Vice Chair Bence, obviously we would not come to the legislature for more money, but we would have to come to the legislature to get the cost cap increased. If that were approved and we had decided not to look at scope modifications or additional tolling, the place that we would most likely move or look at first is our federal formula funds that come to the state of Oregon. Those are largely within ODOT's discretion. Currently, we receive $460 million per year in federal highway formula funds. None of that money currently is bonded or for debt service, and so there is substantial discretion in where the remainder of that goes. Obviously, there's an opportunity cost. If more money were put into the Columbia River Crossing, if that was a decision by ODOT and the legislature to increase the cost cap and spend more money on the project, then there would be other projects that would not be funded across the state, and that would be a decision that would need to be negotiated.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative McEwen.
Oh, thank you, Chair Reed. Thank you for your lightning speed work on this. I'm just amazed that we are back here this quickly. And unfortunately, I just received this about 5 minutes ago. So in Section 9, I just have a clarification on some verbiage where it says the Department of Transportation shall seek to secure an IGA. It would seem to me that we will need an IGA. So rather than seek to secure, why are we not just securing an intergovernmental agreement? Is there...
Chair Reed, Representative McEwen, in this case, we believe that an intergovernmental agreement with the state of Washington could be useful. However, we believe that under current existing statute that it already exists, as well as the changes in toll enforcement included in this amendment, that Oregon would have substantial enforcement authority within our own jurisdiction. And generally, if you can rely on your own powers rather than have to rely on someone else to do the work for you, it's probably a good idea to do that.
So it's worth maybe saying one thing. I think I'm picking up some of the motivation on the question. This Section 9 is referring to an IGA solely for enforcement. Mm-hmm. There is another IGA about all the other elements. Is that right?
Chair Reed, that is absolutely correct. In the conditions on selling the bond, it specifies that we must have an intergovernmental agreement with the state of Washington related to the issues we just discussed around construction, design, development, operations and maintenance. That is absolutely required before we can move forward. And that's what you heard from Governor Kitzhaber last night.
Right.
His discussion with Governor Inslee was that Governor Inslee has directed the Washington State Department of Transportation to begin working with us on that agreement. Yeah, that condition is the bottom of page 2. It is one that would need to be satisfied before we could sell the $450 million in bonds.
So we're talking about two different
right. ideas. This is tolling.
Okay. Yep.
Yes, yep. I got that part.
Okay, good. Yeah. I didn't necessarily. I just wanted to make clear. Thank you.
So in that sense, Representative McEwen, the various toll provisions that are included in this bill, including making toll violation toll evasion a violation of traffic law, so that people would be issued a citation, to including impoundment and immobilization of vehicles, in addition to the civil penalty process. All of the pieces in this are a very robust toll enforcement regime, and we believe that that would give Oregon, within its authority, the ability to go after folks, even out of state. For example, someone issued a toll violation if they did not, or a citation based on not paying a toll. If they did not pay that they did not pay that citation, their driving privileges in Oregon could be suspended. If they were caught driving in the state of Oregon, that's a misdemeanor, and thus is more than just, you know, merely paying a, you know, traffic ticket, for example.
So do the regulations that we have in place at this point in time mirror Washington's ability to seek that the same type of agreement with Oregon right now for Oregon residents who would inadvertently or advertently evade a toll in Washington?
Chair Reed, Representative McEwen, I do not know the answer to that, but we...
Because right now, if you're an Oregonian and you go over the Narrows Bridge and you don't pay the toll, they can send you a citation. Do we have a reciprocal thing in place now, or do we have to do something different because of this bridge?
Mr. Chair, if I could, and for the record, Chris Strickler, project director for the Columbia River Crossing Project. What we have both currently within statute and within the changes within this bill give us the ability to do the same thing. In other words, if a Washington or California or other out-of-state resident were to use the facility, we could then seek them out by way of their license and registration to then send them that bill.
Thank you.
Representative Parrish.
Well, thank you. And to follow up on that, what's that process actually look like? Does ODOT become the enforcement agency? Do we rely on our public safety to become that? And if that's the case, what does that do to public safety budgets in terms of requiring that they go out and chase these folks? I have to imagine that there'd have to be some kind of process in place to be watching for Washington license plates and having police at the border to go and chase those folks down and, you know, give them a ticket or whatever so we could compel them into court. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm just curious how that would actually work and whose budget does that come out of, and, you know, would we have to make additional appropriations somewhere else in a different part of general funds or some other part of the budget to cover that cost?
Chair Reed, Representative Parrish, in this bill, there is a Section 7 that mirrors the photo red light statute. Obviously, with photo red light, you don't have police officers issuing all those citations. The process that we would go through here for these citations would be to have an ODOT toll enforcement officer within a new ODOT toll group actually be able to issue the citation based on photo evidence that would be received through the toll system. And that would substantially lighten the load on law enforcement. Obviously, law enforcement might be engaged in, you know, pulling someone over if they found that they had a citation issued by an ODOT toll enforcement officer. But for the most part, the citations would be issued by ODOT under this statutory provision.
So if I'm in Washington and I'm up in Seattle and I go through a photo radar and they issue me a citation in the mail, what do we currently have on the books between Oregon and Washington to compel me to go up to Washington and show up in court or have my driver's license in Oregon be dinged for something I did in another state? I'm not clear, and I've not received any information in the questions I've asked Washington senators, that there's anything on their books that would let us reach up into Washington and do enforcement. So it's just me then at that point taking the risk that the next time I drive to Seattle that I'm going to, you know, maybe have my plates run, but maybe not, and I can continue to drive up in and out of Washington at my leisure until somebody gets around to pulling me over.
Chair Reed, Representative Parrish, our good friends from DOJ can correct me on this, but typically states have non-resident violator agreements that share information on those violations. So with the state of Washington, for example, if I violate a traffic law in the state of Washington, they can report that to the state of Oregon, and that could include suspension of my license even in Oregon. We're talking at this point about being able to suspend someone's driving privileges in Oregon, but under those typical reciprocal agreements, that is possible if you have violated a traffic law in another state.
And if I could add to, Mr. Chair, one of the other elements, of course, is credit remedies associated with not paying a fine. So if you're speeding in another state, for example, you still have to pay your ticket. It's the same principle, although there are differences amongst, of course, toll violations versus all speeding tickets. But it's you're not let off the hook just because you don't live there. And so you really have to get into that discussion with yourself, frankly, about the credit remedies that would be taken against you by that state.
Good. Thank you. Other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Reed, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to HB 4113, dated 2/13/14.
Thank you. Representative Gorsuch has moved the adoption of the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 4113, dated February 13th, 2014. Is there discussion? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be voting against the amendment. I actually like the original bill. Directs the Department of Transportation to do a study. But in this instance, I want to start by saying that everybody up here on the dais, if I'll just speak for myself, voted in favor of this project almost exactly a year ago. And nobody understands the need, I would say, greater than myself and my family. Many people don't realize I actually have commuted both directions for work for many years. At one point living in the Portland area and working in Vancouver, at one point living in Vancouver and working in Portland, and experiencing the delays, the safety issues, the traffic issues. So what has changed in the last year is a question: why would I no longer support this project? First and foremost is the fact that whatever Washington legislators said last night, Washington has not stepped forward with the support required for this project. And it's interesting that symbolically we're trying to move forward with a bridge, and this is no way to build a bridge with the Washington legislature and with the state of Washington. I would have considerable concerns if Washington attempted to do this the other direction to Oregon. And in that vein, I'm also listening to my constituents. Overwhelmingly, my constituents who were supporters a year ago have said, don't go it alone, don't bear the additional risk. And when asked, the state treasurer told us last night that the risk will be greater on Oregon under this approach, under this bill, and under the amendment that we're considering. Some other things that have changed since last year is that we do know the results of the investment grade analysis. And I'm glad that we requested it. I'm glad it was done. And those results, although some are seeing them as reasons to support this amendment, we're now seeing that the diversion, which we always contemplated, is much worse than many of us ever expected to 205. And it is accurate to say that on the day the I-5 bridge is tolled, not the new bridge being completed, but the day the existing bridges are tolled, we'll divert tens of thousands of cars to 205 and into districts, including mine. And the other side of Portland, the east side of Portland, will bear that burden. We also didn't see anybody that I can recall last night from the Washington governor's office. And we've been told repeatedly that he supports the project, the Washington governor wants us to move forward, that the executive department wants this bridge. But I'm reading from the Columbia River Crossing Coalition's website, Governor Jay Inslee: the phased approach to building the bridge is an intriguing bi-state proposal that Governor Kitzhaber and I have discussed. I believe the idea deserves strong consideration. Consideration. Nobody from his office, and we haven't received any letters saying that he's a supporter of this idea. And in fact, there was evidence to the contrary last night. And many, many months ago, a number of us up here requested that we receive clear direction from the governor's office in Washington. We have not received that direction. The bill that we passed last year also required written findings from our treasurer that a comprehensive financing plan was in place. We don't have that plan. And in fact, under this amendment, he would no longer be required to produce those written findings. So for those who say that everything has been met, all the conditions we set last year have been met except Washington's equity contribution, that is simply not true. We have not received the results. We have not received the written findings that we requested from the treasurer. We just haven't. There are a number of other reasons that others will express here, and I'm going to let them do that now, but those are some of mine. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Another discussion? So the motion, once again, is to adopt the Dash 5 amendments. Are there other objections besides Representative Davis? Representative Cameron?
I don't need to comment, Mr. Chair. You said it all.
Very good. Okay. With those two objections noted, the motion carries and the amendments are adopted. Representative Gorsuch.
Chair Reed, I move HB 4113 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Gorsuch has moved House Bill 4113 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion on this motion? Representative Parrish.
So I'm going to be blunt, which I don't think anybody knows me to be anything other than that. I'm just going to say that I'm very disappointed in this process. I appreciate the hard work of the people at ODOT. You know, we've kind of sat here and grilled you, and it can't be easy to be on the other side of it, this table from us. But of all the big conversations I've been involved in the short time I've been here, I would say that this is probably political theater at its worst. I am very disheartened by the governor's, what I think, arrogant remarks last night, that if we don't build this bridge and there's an emergency or something horrible happens, that it is the fault of this body for not getting our work done. I was horribly offended by that, continued to be, and quite mad, and that the children in rural Oregon will starve if we don't build this bridge. We have plenty of other things that we can do to have jobs in rural Oregon to feed kids, and so, again, very disheartened by his testimony last night. You know, we said if we're going to do a bipartisan, one thing we have not done, to my knowledge, and I've certainly not been asked to participate if it's happened, is to send a group bipartisan bicameral from this body up to Washington to go hammer out a real solution that would lead us to a true bi-state bridge. Nobody seems to be interested in doing that. I'm interested in doing it, and I'm committed to doing that and working with the folks in Washington, Senator Rivers and others in the Senate Majority Coalition Caucus, to get a bridge built that works for both states. And so you're hearing me say that I'm going to continue to support that effort to get us to real transportation solutions that work. I think the removal of the treasurer from this process is not in the spirit of House Bill 2800. This project, frankly, needs the oversight of every independent elected official in this state. Boley for the workforce piece, the Secretary of State for the audit component, and certainly the treasurer for the fiscal component. So it does not surprise me that he does not want the responsibility for that and asked to be removed from the bill. I think the confused testimony of Senator Cleveland last night highlight what a mess this project has actually become. Clearly, there is dissension in their own state between members of that minority voice, which I actually think it's very important to protect the minority voice in any legislative process. So clearly there's dissension in their own state. And obviously, based on their very jubilant testimony that we're right behind you and we're going to go build this bridge, that they're excited that Oregon's going to assume all of the risks for this project, and that's not okay with me. There's no clear plan for the I-205. That's absolutely problematic as 205 goes down to two lanes in my house district. The impacts to the south side of the I-205 as it relates to additional years potentially of tolling has not been clearly addressed. And of course, the whole piece about how do we collect, manage, and enforce tolling, definitely not addressed. Senator Rivers shared with me last night after committee that she didn't get a chance to share is that the tolling statute that Senator Cleveland referred to, she believes, is no longer in effect and that would have to be another vote from their body. Again, not very clear from either side up there what's really going on and who has the authority to do what. This plan puts other projects, we just heard, potentially at risk of having no funds downstream. That concerns me as somebody who has lived in Southern Oregon and other parts of the state that we have to make sure that the funding that we have is also protected for other projects and other communities and not just the metro area. It's not clear that Oregon does have the authority to compel Washingtonians to pay the tolls. That's problematic, certainly for the bonding piece, and the pressure potentially that we just heard to other agencies and other budgets that could affect our general fund could potentially have unintended outcomes. I would like us colleagues to build a bridge. I supported House Bill 2800. I supported it even when there were some people in my community who said that they thought that the first plan was foolhardy. I believe in infrastructure, and to the people who want those jobs, who are sitting in this room, who represent those people, I want to continue to work with you all to find a solution, and I'm absolutely committed to that. I am not committed to putting all of our risk in Oregon's lap when we don't have the volume of people Washington has, we do not have the income levels Washington has, and frankly, a whole slew of other policies that put us in a weaker position to be the lead on this project, and a clear mismanagement of other projects in the state, not necessarily ODOT related, tells me that this is not a good idea. I'm going to be a no on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just want to express my appreciation for all of us who took time yesterday to testify. Transparency in the public hearing process is something I hold very dear and near, and I think everybody conducted themselves well. It was critically important for me to hear a lot of that again. I don't have the advantage that some people here do that have been around longer on this particular. Well, I had a chance to vote on it last year. I don't have all the other history, and so that, from my standpoint, was important. And I, frankly, went into that public hearing pretty concerned about the project and not very supportive of the project for a lot of different reasons, a lot of which was discussed last night. But out of that process, several things came out. So I want to express, first, I'm absolutely convinced we need to replace the bridge. Now, I'm not so convinced the earthquake's a bigger risk, given the time. I'm very convinced about those up and down movements and the risk there. And I'm absolutely convinced the potential impact it can have on commerce for the delays. A lot of businesses I work with, the delays, the being able to know that you can move back and forth, whether it takes a minute longer or less, isn't the important thing. But the predicting of being able to deliver goods is very important. So from my standpoint, that's an important aspect, and more years of delay probably don't address that. One of the compelling arguments for me was listening to people from Eastern Oregon and the coast and so on about how it does relate to them and to their commerce and to their economic development. I think those are real issues. I wish there was a better solution, because I'm not an expert in this. I don't necessarily have the best solution, but a lot of people have worked on this a long time. We've spent a lot of money. I still have two or three concerns. One of those concerns is I'm very, very concerned about the cost, and that we're not going to be able to build the bridge for that. Just looking at these size of projects around this country, just knowing what happens with cost overruns, that concerns me. I appreciate the bill, though, being written the way the bill is, so that if it goes to exceed that, it has to come back to whoever the legislative body is at that time, and I think that's an appropriate concern. I had concerns about managing the project, and I think Representative Nathanson talked about that some last night, and I appreciate the amendments to the bill. At the end of the day, I wish we could spend the time and energy we spent on this for the last 10 years to address some of the other very critical issues we have in the state with childhood hunger, with poverty, with education. It isn't the fault of this bridge or anybody else, but somehow we get infrastructure. In many cases, we spend a lot of time and energy and years working it out, and we don't spend that same time and energy dealing with the others. And I encourage those people that have spoke strongly in support of this project and that to help us spend time addressing some of those important issues. So while I have concerns, doubts, I'm concerned about the risk, I believe that the measure, as we're considering it, puts in the correct points of concern, addresses the controls, has the right points where we, whether we either move forward or we don't move forward. And I think we spent enough time at this particular point, and while I don't believe it's the ideal solution, I think we need a solution, and I'm willing to vote in favor.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Doherty.
Okay. I was thinking about this last night when we talk about the history of what this project is, and as a former history teacher, that's sometimes how I kind of think. And I think back maybe 110 years ago. Of course, no women would be in the room because at that time no women had the right to vote in Oregon and Washington. But I can see the conversation back then of, you want to spend all this money building a bridge when we have a damn good ferry taking us from Oregon or from Portland to Vancouver? And you know that those kind of conversations were going on, because at that time there was a ferry between Portland and Vancouver. And granted, we didn't have the trucking that we have now, and there were probably no railroad bridges and everything else. But I look at the history, and I think that's probably the same conversations that were going on 105 years ago as were going on right now. We can't afford it. It's too much. Do we really need it? And so on and so forth. But the bottom line is don't look at next year. Don't look at the year after that. Look at 60, 70 years from now, 100 years from now. That's what we need to look at for the bridge. And I'm confident our questions have been answered. The bridge is going to be there for another, the new bridge is going to be there for another 100 years. We need to look at it history. I think we also need to look at the history of the current ODOT. They come in on time and under budget. And I think all you have to do is look at what ODOT has done on some major projects. Well, there's been, you know, a problem with one. But if you look at most of the projects that they've done, and big projects, they're under budget and on time. And I can guarantee you that that is going to be in Director Garrett's mind 24/7 until the ribbon is cut on that bridge. So anyway, I'm for the bridge. We've got to build it. Let's get going.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Borsig.
Well, Representative Lively and Doherty have certainly covered a lot of what I was considering saying, so I'll make this very short. This bridge is about the future. This is about not next week, not 2 years from now. Hopefully it's a bridge 60, 70, 100 years later. And it's not just about us. It's about the whole West Coast and the links into the West Coast from other parts of the country. we are part of a national system, and this bridge is extremely important to that national system. So while we will get benefits from it, like relief for Hayden Island with a secondary bridge, which they've needed forever, the real focus of this is the commerce, the certainty that it moves, defending against what we know certainly will occur in terms of a large earthquake. And while we have, and we like to do this in Oregon, we've talked a lot about this project. I am satisfied from the testimony that I've heard that we need to go forward. And so, you know, and I'm not a person that everything that the governor says I go along with. But on this, I think he's absolutely certain. He's absolutely right. And he said it very well last night. No bridge along the Columbia River has ever been perfectly decided. People have disagreed. Different funding formulas have come up. It's not unusual for one side to fund it when the other side doesn't. So we need to learn from that history and understand that any big project will have its critics. Any big project will have its problems. But I think if you look at the way this has been put together and the way it's been written in statute, that it will be the answer that we need. We need that bridge, and to steal from Nike, just do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your patience through all of these hearings. So I've obviously spent a great deal of time thinking about this, and I think it's been worth every moment of the time we put into it. Starting almost 3 years ago when we formed the Oversight Committee to look into a $3 billion project, so that approach was correct. And as a result of that then two-year effort, a year ago, worked hard to put together a 2800 that addressed, I thought, the certainty issue extraordinarily well, and also addressed the uncertainty issue, if you will. The certainty issue is that we will have the $2.9 billion that was in 2800. And we asked that our treasurer step up and assure us that we had it. That was there for a reason, because we kind of want to make sure we have $2.9 billion before we start down this track. This amendment does away with that. And I understand why. The exigencies of the time and the need to move forward require that certainty be left alongside the road, and we go for it if we're going to. That's a tough choice. The second piece, though, is even more interesting. We've heard a little bit about it, and that is, how do we deal with the uncertainty of cost and price in excess of $2.9 billion? And last year, we had a partner, Washington, that would share half of that uncertainty with us. This amendment does away with that, not because it wants to, but because Washington hasn't stepped up. The challenge is how do we manage that now that Washington isn't with us? And that's why I ask these questions, so that instead of just talking about Oregon taking more risk, we actually focus on who is taking the risk. And the answer is quite simple. All of the counties are taking the risk. All of the funding that's in the surface transportation plan is what's going to absorb this risk. So when we talk about risk in broad general terms, that's all very nice, but it's really a good idea to see who's going to actually pay. What will happen, I predict, is that if this bill passes and we spend the $2.9 billion, which we already know is pretty much spent if we go forward, from last night's testimony from Director Garrett. And I want to say I appreciate Director Garrett's candid approach to this. It's been a welcome set of discussions over the past 3 years. I want to say, though, that if we spend the $2.9 billion, let's go through the alternatives. If we try to raise the tolls, that will drive more traffic down 205. So there'll be huge political pressure not to raise the tolls. If we try to obtain more federal money, unlikely. Opportunity gone. If we try to go to Washington and ask them to kick in what they should have, unlikely.
That will leave the federal formula money. I'm just looking at government relations page out of ODOT's website, updated on March 12th of 2013, so about a year ago. And it says federal funding at risk. The Federal Surface Transportation Program invests more than $500 million in Oregon Highway a year. However, because the federal fuels tax has not been raised since 1993, the program is falling behind. And Congress, in order to keep this going, has got to kick in another $50 billion in the general fund. If it doesn't, those federal formula monies will be spent cut by 30%. It's been my experience in watching my counties work that they have anticipated receipt of those monies and predicted their arrival 5 or 10 years out. If we go to them and say, guess what, we're going to reach into that bucket and take it and give it to this bridge, what do you think they're going to say? I already know because I've asked. And I've noticed a distinct switch when I talk to them about, gee, we need to have a port to get these exports out. But if you have to give up your federal funding formula monies to get the products out of the county and down the road, their attitude toward the bridge changes pretty dramatically. And yet, as I look at this, I understand that a no vote today probably, and if this thing doesn't get out of here, we're looking at another long time before we go forward. So I've debated with myself on this a long time. I'm going to be a no vote today, and the reason has to do with my understanding of the political process and that my part of the world will probably not be able to protect itself when the hand reaches in the federal formula funding bucket. I don't have the power to protect ourselves then, so I got to do it now. So I'll be no vote, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Benz. Once again, the motion is to send the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended and on to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Ms. Dickinson, would you please call the roll?
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Doherty?
Yes.
Representative Lively?
Yes.
Representative McEwen?
Yes.
Representative Nathanson?
Aye.
Representative Parrish?
No.
Vice Chair Benz?
No.
Vice Chair Gorsuch?
Absolutely.
And Chair Reed?
Aye. Motion having received the required majorities passed. Bill 41-13 heads on to the Committee on Ways and Means. There is another committee waiting for us, so I won't say a lot. I would just like to thank the committee for a thoughtful discussion, a lot of it, and we're not meeting tomorrow, so we'll be meeting on Monday.
Yeah, we'll have Senate bills on
with some Senate bills.
Mr. Chair,
thank you all very much. Representative Cameron.
I want to thank you for your leadership and how you conducted these committees. Great job.
Thank you. We're adjourned. We're adjourned.